Welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show, a movie podcast where we ask the important questions like, could I afford the taxi from Lily Rose Depp's eyebrows to her hairline?
How?
Obviously not.
Dare you for a start, sir.
With the swearing.
You just swore by insulting that perfect hairline.
Read the next bit of the pre-prod, babe.
This is the censored version of the show. Swears will be bleeped, but fear not, dear listener. As always, the full uncensored version is available early on our Patreon for as little as £1.
As little as a pound, and the link to that is wherever you hit play.
How are you doing today, bud?
I'm okay, with two answers here. Mm-hmm. I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. How about you? But then, yeah. I'm going to edit, because hello, Patreon. I just flooded with emotions. I'm sort of surfing through that flood of ideas.
Hilarious.
I've got to just ride the wave, yeah. You know, because when it rains, it pours.
And, this is great.
You know, I've got to just go with the flow.
This is all good stuff.
How are you doing, babe?
It's all those surfing and wet jokes that Rob was just telling. I've had a leak in my roof where all of my collectibles are stored. So I've lost about between two and two and a half grand's worth of stuff.
Yeah.
Which I didn't really appreciate until now.
And just the floodgates opened into emotionally.
The floodgates have opened and now I'm just...
You were a damn fool.
You can cry off, buddy. 2/3 of my comic book collection is gone, and that includes most of my old Marvel, my old DC, all the valuable stuff's gone.
You had the first issue of The Splash. That's The Flash.
Mm-hmm. I did. Yeah. I did. I only kept that. I hate The Flash. It's the most boring superhero. The only reason I kept it is because I found it in a bookstore in London with you, and that memory meant a lot to me. And when I told you this, you were like, I have zero recollection of that. And I'm like, mint. Glad I held on to that for 18 years. Maybe this flood is telling me something, bud.
Well, I've got some blurry years, all right?
Yeah, same, dickhead. All my records are gone. Comic books are gone. A lot of my like collectible figures are gone. It's all good, though. It's all good.
Yeah, stop being such a drip and just accept the fact that you've now finally got a waterbed.
Are we done with a bit? Because it's starting to get personal. You know what I mean? It was fun. It was very fun.
Right.
And I'm trying to remain positive, but also I will fight you in a car park. I will lock you in a dumpster. You absolute troglodyte.
All right. Look, Ben, I just know that you've told me many times on this show that when something bad happens, you know, you laugh at it.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you process. I'm helping you process. Okay, I'm washing it clean for you.
What are we doing today, buddy?
All right, today we are doing Nosferatu from the director of The Lighthouse and The Witch, Robert Eggers, as he takes on the task of remaking the first great vampire story in the history of cinema.
Yeah, we are. And today we're going to be answering all the hard questions about this film, my bud, my wet, wet bud.
I'm dry as a bone.
Must be nice. We're going to be answering the questions like, why folklore now?
Who's got the biggest balls in Germany?
Is Count Orlok the Antichrist?
But most importantly, did Nosferatu 2024 make us good little Christian boys?
The answer's no, but...
Right.
But...
But...
Maybe.
okay. Well, good news, bud. I know you've had a lot on, you know, you've really been sort of weighed down by the weight of stuff on you.
This
close to collapsing, so...
You're editing this one, right?
Yeah.
Good. You. Suck my...
just quickly, though, I wanted to save you a bit of time, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I know you've had a lot on. Mm-hmm. So I wrote the breakdown for you, bud. I kind of tried to best interpret how you would see this film.
Right.
And I just wrote it in your voice.
I've just read the first sentence. And, okay. All right. So we've got...
Come on. Uncontroversial, mate.
Yeah, we're doing this way.
This is exactly what you think.
Yeah. Sound. We're going this way. This is long as well. Jesus Christ.
It's not that long. It's a long film, Ben. It's 2.5 hours. All right?
All right.
By the way, spoiler warning. We are going to talk about what happens in the film. So later on, you know what we're talking about. If you've not seen the film yet...
Yeah, go watch it and then immediately come back because we are desperate for your attention.
Ben needs a new ceiling.
It's so true. Oh, God. I've lost so much. All right. So, I sat through Nosferatu. And let me tell you, slow as hell. I hate this already. You got this guy, Hutter. We get sent to Count Orlok's creepy castle to do real estate paperwork. Classic horror setup, am I right?
Yeah, it is.
But instead of launching into blood-drinking mayhem, Orlok just sort of lurks like me at a party, staring at her in his sleep, creeping around hallways, genuinely being a weird little goblin. Love this. Eventually, Hutter realizes, oh no, this guy's a vampire. But by then, Orlok's already loading himself into a coffin and shipping off to town.
Yeah, boy.
Meanwhile, Willem Dafoe shows up as Professor Albin Eberhard von Franz. Some vampire hunting academic.
Yeah.
He pops in to drop some serious vampire lore and warn everyone about Orlok. Defoe's got that intense vibe, and he's all about the ancient texts and ominous prophecies.
Yeah.
But honestly, for all his build-up, he doesn't get to do much except look worried and spout shite about mysticism. Total underuse of his talent.
I've got to say, I'm nailing your tone of voice.
Yeah,
here.
Sound. I'm really trying to lean into it, but it's hard. I need you to know that, all right? It's hard. Back home, Hutter's wife Ellen is having mystic visions about Orlok, because of course she's the saucy minx. Right. Meanwhile, Orlok's arrival brings a plague, except instead of seeing him go full monster, we just watch rats scurry around while people drop dead off screen. It's all very moody and slow. But where's the carnage? Where's the throat ripping? It's just sad people in candlelight whispering about poetry. Finally, Orlok sneaks into Ellen's room, and I'm thinking, all right, finally, we're getting something big. But nah, he drinks her blood. Well, they shag for like 2 minutes, the sun comes up, and he disintegrates like a loser. No epic battle, no crazy kill, just a puff of smoke, and that's it. The end. It looks great, but man, it needed way more blood, way more screaming, and at least one guy getting his spine yanked out. Solid 2.
Now tell me that is not the exact position you've taken,
bro,
on some absolute classic films.
You are so far wrong with this one. It's actually unreal. That was kind of hurtful. All right.
Well, I knew that you loved this film. I knew that this was one of your favorite horrors of recent memory, and I thought,
all right,
let's just shit on that.
Yeah, thanks, man.
You know, we had nothing else going on.
No, I appreciate it.
I wanted to really find the ceiling on your tolerance. Well, you know
this. Okay, right. Hear me out. This needs to stop.
Okay.
I get it. Right? I have lost
a
lot of shit. I know you're trying to help me like process it, and I love you for that. Just spoiler.
Yeah.
It's kind of working, but
okay,
not in the way that you think. All right.
Okay. Fine. All right. Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. My man's getting erect. Fine.
keep bullying, see what happens. You know?
Right.
Right. What was your initial reaction to this film? Because as you've just nailed my opinion, what was yours? How did you feel coming out of this for the first time?
So, as I said last week, busier than a monkey with two cocks in one hand. Mm-hmm. And I've got a bunch of stuff on. Work is busy because we're a man down. And every time I watch this film, I spin the wheel on how I feel about it. And I've come to a conclusion.
Okay.
It's a great film.
Yeah.
It's not my great film. And let me explain why.
Okay.
If I gave you a decent meal, like a totally standard breaded chicken burger with a bit of mayo, would you eat it and how would you feel about it? It's just like a...
Fine. Sustenance.
Chicken cottage, right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, if I gave you an incredible, beautifully seasoned breaded chicken, everything was perfect. The breading was like mad crispy. Mm-hmm. The sauce was like a spicy ranch thing.
Sure.
The salad was like crisp and cold. There was fries. Everything was mint. How'd you feel about that?
Do you hate me? I told you that I was starving before we started recording. You've done nothing but take the piss out of a broken ceiling. And now I'm starving. Mint.
Right. Imagine that, right?
But yeah, delicious. Yeah. That sounds amazing. Right. That sounds incredible.
Now you look down halfway through eating it and there's an undercooked pink seam all the way through the meat.
Medium rare chicken.
Right.
It's the one.
Which is the better meal? Because one's almost perfect, but there's just that bit that's undercooked. And you're like, this would have been brilliant if not for this bit that just needed that little extra more. And for me, the closer something gets to perfect,
yeah,
the angrier it makes me.
Oh, when it does it, when it just misses the mark.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And I sit there and stew about how it like could have been the best thing ever, if not for just this one thing.
Okay.
And everything about this film is brilliant.
Yeah.
Like the lighting is
gorgeous.
Insane.
Gorgeous.
The casting is insane. This film is one of the most beautiful horror films.
Right.
Every frame is a painting. You can pause this film at any point.
Yep.
And frame it, and you would be well happy with what you just put on your wall.
Yeah, 100%.
I even got over the fact that Orlok's mustache makes him look a bit like Borat.
Oh God, I love that mustache. It's the
Nosferatu. Woo-wah-wee-wah, I have my own coffin. King of the castle, king of the castle.
Wee-wah-woo-wah, my wife.
Right, exactly. Right.
Okay, yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's the problem.
Right, I can see it now.
But I got over it, right? King of the castle's great. The moment-to-moment dialogue is exceptional.
Yeah.
But, and I always say that everything that happens before you touch the butt is irrelevant once you do.
Right.
I find, and shockingly for a remake, mm-hmm. there's not much new here.
Okay.
I kind of feel the pull, I feel the call of my phone in my pocket as I'm watching. I'm going, this is great. This is great.
Might just check Instagram real quick.
Just going to load Reddit real quick. Just quick peek. And then I'll find myself scrolling. I'm like, oh shit, I should watch this film. God, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
God, that performance, mint. Oh, look, hamster eating bananas, mint.
Amazing. Yeah.
And for me, I struggled to figure out why. Because everything I looked at, I was like, well, maybe it's this. And I've got two pages of stuff mm-hmm. I no longer think is true that I spent a lot of time working on.
Ooh, okay. This is interesting. So you have a full setup from when you were in a bad mood watching this. And you have a full setup for when you were in a good mood watching this.
No, Okay. So allow me to launch into another bit, right? My first thought was thin plot.
That's wildly upsetting for you to say out loud, but that's fine. Continue.
Bear with me, right?
In the
proper versions of this story that we've covered before, because we did Dracula 1931.
We did.
And we did Bram Stoker's Dracula.
What a masterpiece.
Now, right, exactly. Yeah. What a masterpiece.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun as hell.
It is.
You get to see a dog man have sex with a woman in the garden.
Yeah.
But there's also like a clear duality provided in what the villains and the protagonists are offering. And both of them have got something worthwhile on offer.
Okay.
So Bram Stoker's Dracula, Gary Oldman, he's crossed oceans of time to be with her.
Yeah.
And sure, he's a freaky dog Batman, but like, he's hot. And it's kind of, there's that sense of, there's actually something there that might be of worth for our female protagonist.
Okay.
Whereas with the human characters, there's mm-hmm. genuinely naive and sweet romantic love. And that's juicy. And I love it. And in this, Thomas's relationship to Ellen is much more strained. The men repeatedly don't listen to the women.
They don't.
She spends the entire film telling everyone exactly what's going to happen. And because it's a remake, and because we've seen this story before, we know she's right. We've just got to sit through 2 hours of everyone else realizing it.
Okay.
And then on the other side, with Nosferatu himself, he's simply evil. No more, no less. There's no complexity there if he is... Oh. Gary Oldman, who's crossed oceans of time. He's just a big old Satan.
Okay.
Right?
This is all interesting because I have points on all of this.
But none of this is how I feel anymore because I watched it again and again and I was like, okay, there is complexity and subtlety there.
Thank you.
I just still don't care about it.
That's fair. You know what I mean? That's all I wanted. As long as you can acknowledge that it's there.
It is there.
It doesn't matter whether it tickles your pickle or not.
It is there. It just doesn't grab me.
That's fine.
Know?
That's fine. See, my first impression from this film, I went to go see it on release day in the UK, which was like New Year's Day after America.
Same.
Fuming. Right.
Right.
I had to dodge social media for like 3 days, 4 days. How many days is it between Christmas and New Year's? It's like 19. It feels like 12.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
So I had to dodge social media for that much because everyone was talking about it. I came out the cinema and I think I was overwhelmed because I watched it in the IMAX.
Right.
And
okay.
I can't put into words how amazing that experience was.
Brilliant.
When I went in expecting sort of a generic remake. We've all seen Nosferatu. Yeah. We all know the story. We've all seen Dracula.
Yes,
X, Y, and Z. What I didn't expect was this desperately cold, brutal interpretation that kind of carries meaning regardless of what time we're in. Like this this will mean the same to me in 40 years as it does right now.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
It's been a while since a film's hit me that way. So I came out of the cinema a little bit overwhelmed and I was like, I'm going to have to calm down. Going to have to sort of, you know, taper off a bit and then go back and watch it again.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not a big fan of period pieces because get in the bin, clearly who not. Cares?
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of...
But this one, it gives you the hot water bottle, it gives you the bar of chocolate, it gives you the Bridget Jones and you're just there going, I'm having my period piece.
The thing about this
and
is...
And this is tolerable.
Yeah, the period piece in this one, though, the subtle emotions and the stuff like this is all tainted with weird evil. And I was like, this is the emotional range that I feel like I can understand. Mm. I feel like I'm the right type of autistic to get that.
Right, yeah.
Normal human emotions, no clue.
Right, yeah.
Social cues are terrifying. But if a rotting corpse of a man with a magnificent mustache and a horrid voice is like breathing like a broken Henry Hoover.
It's a blunt enough hammer for you to be able to see what's going on there.
That's exactly what it is. It removed a tooth with how much this hit me in the face. It was incredible. Yeah. You know what I mean? The plot.
You're saying it put the blood back into the period for you.
It put what, sorry?
It put the blood back into the period for you.
There you go. That's exactly what it did. Yeah.
Horrible way of phrasing it. I hate that already.
Yeah. I just wanted you to say it twice because now you've really set it in. You know what I mean? That's on the internet forever. Twice.
It's your reaction, not mine.
So the thin plot point is valid because I had a similar thought when I first watched it, but then going back, I thought the relationship between Count Orlok and Ellen was much more complex because obviously she's treated like shit for the entire film. She's ignored.
Yep.
She's suppressed. They don't accept her as a person with any sort of desire or sexuality.
Or agency.
Yeah. They try and suppress it all.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the opening scene is her summoning someone or something to cure her desperate loneliness. And Count Orlok answers the call. Obviously, like calling in the Nosferatu, right? Which is, it's just incredible. And you get just from that scene when you really sit and think about it, how horrid her life must have been to get to that place. And then you see how she's treated for the rest of the film when she's supposed to be like happily married. Her husband's doing great in his job. Oh, isn't he ambitious? This is fantastic. And you're like, God, you must have had it rough. If this is a step up, you had it rough. Jesus Christ. And this is where I got my first train of thought from, right? Who has got the biggest balls in Germany?
In Germany.
Who's got the biggest balls in, what's this town called?
Wiesberg.
I was going to say Nilbog.
Yeah. You can't piss on hospitality.
And I started really looking into like the Ellen character a little bit, started to like really think about it. Because obviously, at first glance, you've got Ellen, who appears to be like this mentally unstable, mentally unwell woman who just needs taking care of. She just needs a cuddle. Right. She needs a blanket. Yeah, she needs a cup of tea. She needs to shut the fuck up. All right? You're bothering me now. Let me do my real estating. All right?
Right, yeah.
I'll do the real estate.
That's very much Thomas's attitude.
Yeah. Oh, you want me to get back in bed with you? Take my shoes off. Lie down and play with the cat. All right?
This is the Victorian era. Do you know how long shoes to take to put on?
Yeah. He's like, you're not worth it. I'm going to go to work. I would rather go to work. Bye. He was already 15 minutes late. Have a dip. You know what I mean?
Oh, God.
So, it's fine. It's the Victorian era, right?
Yes.
She's having these visions. She's having desires. And they're all wildly dismissed by society as a case of hysteria or melancholy.
Yeah, yeah.
Her sexuality is suppressed with medication, which is essentially just chloroform and ether to stop her acting out.
Have some more heroin and shut up.
This is literally it. Take your opiates. Stop being weird, where I don't want to see you writhe, you dirty wench. Patriarchy hater. All her visions are dismissed as this weird fantasy.
Yeah, yeah.
However, Ellen, being the strongest character in this film, endures the most torture from not only her human counterparts, but also the vampire, Count Orlok.
Right, yeah.
She endures all the torture. She ultimately bears the biggest sacrifice, freeing everyone.
Right.
Completely selflessness. It's just...
Oh, I'm going to challenge that later in my final takeaway. But yeah, selflessness, fine.
The whole selflessness aspect, she's doing this thing to protect the people that she loves, who treat her so well, who look after all her needs. Make sure she's well attuned. Sacrifices all of it just to save the rest of humanity, man. It's insane. So this little nugget of Ellen falling on that grenade shows me that Lily Rose Depp has the biggest balls in Germany.
Oh, okay.
I mean, she also kind of summoned the Nosferatu into the world because she was a lonely kid. But, you know, swings and roundabouts.
I thought it was her because I know that Nicholas Hoult was gifted Nosferatu's prosthetic penis.
He was.
After shooting, because during one of the scenes...
After shooting?
Where... during one of the scenes, Bill Skarsgård was really close to Nicholas Hoult.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept rubbing up against him. And he kept complaining. He's like, it's really like on me. And so after the shooting, as you so rightly pointed out, very mature joke.
Thank
you. I hope you're proud. It's something I forever.
I really am. Twice.
Right. It was gifted to him. The prosthetic penis was gifted to him. And he now has that framed in his house.
Aww.
And I thought it would be a wonderful full circle moment if Nicholas Hoult got the shaft, but Lily Rose Depp got the balls.
I think that's
see?
It. See, this is it's all come full circle. You know what I mean? This is great. This is great. What a weave.
A good moment for history.
We web.
What a weave we web. Speaking of Nosferatu.
Yeah.
What was your take on Skarsgård's performance?
Insane. I can't tell you how creepy it is in an oddly perverse way, because he's ridiculously sexual as a being.
Everything
about him is like oozing,
I'ma
get you. You know what I mean? Like, it's that. And the fact that he's picked out a kid and done the whole I'ma get you on a kid for years, it's like, dude, problematic. I get it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But then he's got this weird charm about him because he don't take
shit. Yeah, he's got a quiet confidence, and he knows for a fact that nothing is of any threat to him.
No, nothing at all. He's just cruising through life like chomping tits like no man's business. He's loving it. You know what I mean? Even Hutter's not safe.
Like a mammary Pac-Man.
Literally mammary Pac-Man.
Waka, waka, waka.
That's exactly it. You know what I mean? Oh, who's your wife? My lilac. Okay, sound.
Right.
Where's your tits, Hutter? I can't get to your wife right now, but I damn well take yours.
I've got a great quote from Bill Skarsgård, who, those of you who don't know, he played Pennywise in the It remakes. He sort of done a bit of a horror darling moment in his career.
Yeah, he's killing it.
But he was concerned about the way Nosferatu was going to look. The makeup would take hours. And so it's sort of 4 to 6 hour process. And about the halfway point, he said he was worried he wouldn't be able to perform properly whilst wearing the layers of makeup and prosthetics. And in an interview he did with Entertainment Weekly, he says, I was worried I couldn't perform through it, that it would feel like a giant prosthetic pieces and I couldn't come alive through that. There was definitely a stage where they hadn't put everything on where I was like, I look like the f***ing Grinch or a f***ing goblin.
He's kind of right. You know what I mean?
He's got goblin-esque attributes to him.
But I love that, though.
But in the best kind of way.
Yeah, in the best kind of way. I get a bit sick of vampires because it's always... I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of Twilight because of how stupid it is. But also, I like that he's like a melted, reanimated corpse in this one.
Yeah, he's a proper old style.
Yeah.
I know Eggers went back to the original folklore and like the history of... the concept of the vampire in Europe.
Dude.
Because Eggers doesn't get out.
Eggers is a nerd, and I love this, because not only has this film sort of taught me a little bit about myself, I'll give you that in my final takeaway, because I think I'm hoping it changes your perception just a little bit. Not a lot, but just enough is what I'm hoping for. But he's a nerd, man. He got me looking into like weird history surrounding medieval Europe and vampires. Now, I'm not much of an edgelord, right?
Right, are you not?
That's exactly what an edgelord would say, but I don't really have the conviction to be one, do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's never really caught me. But I'm teetering at the minute, man. I'm on the edge. You know what I mean? I looked into the history of the plague, the history of how medieval Europe used to blame unexplained plague outbreaks on supernatural creatures because they couldn't fathom how it was spreading so fast and the damage it was causing. Now, Eggers takes this. And he runs with it.
He really does.
He goes crazy. So, you know the scene when Nosferatu is traveling by the boat in the box full of rats, right?
Yeah.
Filled to the brim.
Only way to travel, mate. Only way to travel.
First class.
Do you know how warm that is?
Yeah. Nice little, it is a warming blanket. It's incredible. Yeah. So this boat filled to the brim with plague rats, and the time it takes for the boat to reach Wisborg, everyone's dead.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Great.
Literally vomited themselves to death.
Exactly. So this is what would happen back in the day on maritime trade routes were a...
plague ships, man. They plague were serious.
Ships. Plague ships, or, hear me out now, read this today, changed me, death vessels.
Ooh.
Best band name I've ever heard. A death vessel hitting land, spewing rats, like literally like just an open artery, spewing onto the land.
Ben, can we start a band called Death Vessels?
Yes, 1,000%. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Exactly. So all these rats would come out, everyone would succumb to a plague, and it was big with the Black Death. This used to happen a lot.
Right.
So with the rats thing as well, Eggers focuses on the rats. And this is just a theory of mine.
Right.
Not just because they are all-star champions of carrying the plague and stealing pizza. You know, special shout out to Pizza Rat.
Yeah.
Rest in power, you beautiful bastard. But because Count Orlok and Nosferatus are pests.
Ooh,
you know what I mean?
Okay.
It gives us a little insight showing that Orlok isn't just supernatural, but also a biological nuisance.
Ooh.
You don't know?
Ooh.
Orlok is slaying it in multiple arenas here. He's killing it in the physical, but he's also killing it in the mystical. Do you know what I mean? He can bang out a scientific essay, but he can also read your palms. That's dangerous levels of Riz. You know what I mean? That's
pretty good.
Pretty alpha. You know what I mean? I'm trying to use words that I've read online.
They did do good with the rats in this movie. They did better than Werner Herzog, who in his version of Nosferatu... release them all.
Outstanding.
So Amsterdam was flooded with 11,000 painted rats.
What an absolute hero. That makes
there
it
was
better.
No plan for containing them.
Yeah, that makes it better. I love this stuff. The another aspect of the film that really hit me is the sort of, maybe not religious undertones, but definitely like Christian undertones, right?
Ooh.
So back in medieval Europe, Christianity, big thing.
You're a big Christianity guy, right? This is your wheelhouse.
Oh, I'm huge. Yeah. This is, just call me Vicar Ben. You know what I mean?
Father Groves.
Father Groves.
Father Groves.
Let's never do this again. let's let this one die immediately because that made my entire skin crawl. So I know that the theme's present in the original, but I think Eggers sort of takes it to a different level. He's both respecting the original source material and he makes it accessible, impactful, and most importantly, ridiculously brutal for all of us horror fans, regardless of whether we understand the religious undertones or not. He is essentially the Carl Sagan of horror right now, and I absolutely love him for it. He's taken something that's very complex, very long-lasting, huge chunk of history. It's a very sensitive subject, and he sort of peppered it in to a relatively light-hearted horror. I say lighthearted, it's brutal,
Okay, you know what I mean? Hear you. I hear you on the Carl Sagan thing.
Yeah.
One of the things that annoys me about Eggers, and this is nothing to do with him, it's to do with the people around him, in that people describe his films as elevated horror.
Yeah.
Now, basically what they're saying is, there's a decent film which has bothered to do things like subtext and suggestive plots and... research, right?
Sure.
And bothers to say something about the world we live in within the horror genre. Mm. All it's actually saying is they're good horror films that are a bit slower and require a bit more active focus. And it's weird for me with this film because this must be how you feel when I bring films that you're like, yeah, they're fine, but they just don't. I wasn't scared.
Yep. No,
that's
good.
I wasn't informed. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a very concise and wonderfully put together collection of stuff that I'm a big fan of.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, in the bringing together of that stuff, give me anything that I think is particularly unique about it.
Okay, that's understandable. I thought that Orlok himself would have tickled your fancy a little bit.
He does. Again, everything about this film is perfect. Mm-hmm. It's just not more than the sum of its parts.
Okay.
Sometimes all this stuff comes together and 2 + 2 = 5. And in this one, 2 + 2 = 4. Of course it does.
Yeah.
You've got a great monster. You've got a great performance. You've got lovely things. And I'm sat there going, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
Until I got into the couple of hints that they give about Ellen, about I'm not entirely sure she is human.
Okay, in what sense? I have something for this, but for what sense?
So he goes around to her Knox, right? And he's like, oh, your wife is otherworldly. She's like a sylph.
Sure.
Right? Which is a mythological sort of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
there's all this sort of stuff. We don't really go into her childhood. She's just lonely. She talks about being in the woods a lot. Mm-hmm. Nosferatu says, you are not of the human world. Mm-hmm. There's reference again and again and again to her not being necessarily a mortal person.
Okay.
Whether it's Nosferatu telling her, whether it's Willem Dafoe's character. There's all this stuff being like, you're different, you're set apart.
Yeah.
And that's where the film gets more interesting. Again, I still don't care about it.
Okay.
At the end of it. But what I found interesting was the idea that Nosferatu is right.
Okay.
No one else has summoned him. She has.
She has.
She's called out and gone, yo, is anyone there? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh my God, it's one of these. Wicked. I'm turning up.
Yeah.
And then she spends the rest of her life going, nah, I'm a normal person. And he's the one going, you're not. Stop being a bellend. You're not these people. You're not going to find your happiness here.
Okay. I like this.
That's a more interesting dynamic, because then it becomes she wants him, but she doesn't love it. It's like he's a toxic ex who she's drunk dialed just after getting married. And he's heard the dinner bell and he's consistently saying, well, why'd you send the text then if you don't want me? And because her ex is a nutter who's going to do in the mister.
Yeah, yeah.
She sort of submits, gets her great night and ends up being what she was always going to be, which is this kind of otherworldly, mystical, as Willem Dafoe says, priestess of Isis, who's kind of there to absorb a Nosferatu, to be the willing vessel, to be the virginal sacrifice that everybody needs.
To be the sacrifice, much like a very prominent religious figure that we all know and love. You know what I mean?
Oh God, are you going to try and say that she's a Jeebus?
I'm going to try and say that she might be a Jeebus. You know what I mean?
Right,
let's look at it.
I'm saying she's more of like a Victorian hot wife who allows the demon to have a go on her to save her. It's Dracula, essentially. No. It's Nicholas Holt sat on that little chair in the hotel room.
That's good. That is good.
Dracula, come on.
Dracula, that is pretty good. Yeah, that is good. Ount. Ignore me.
So good, it's crashed you.
Yeah, okay, that is good. I'm going to go one step further. I'm going to lean into the Christianity thing.
Right.
I'm going to say that Orlok is the Antichrist.
Right.
He's a perverted inversion of Jesus Christ, right?
Okay, yeah.
So in Christianity, Jesus gives his blood on the cross and people drink from the blood of Christ for communion.
They do.
Nosferatu feasts on the blood of the innocent for his brekkie. Perverse inversion.
Yeah, but that's vampires. That's not Nosferatu. Okay. That's not Eggers. Right. That's always been the vampiric.
I'm sorry. Nosferatus are a type of vampire. Orlok
are they?
Is the Nosferatu. All right.
What's the different type of vampire that's a Nosferatu?
Well, you got the.
Are we getting into subdivisions?
You've got the glittery spider monkey ones that can run dead fast in woods. That's Edward Cullen.
Right.
You've got the ones who traveled an ocean of time but need blood to stay young. But with mint hair, Oldman. Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
You've got Tom Cruise, whatever the fuck that was. You've got...
That's an incredible film. It's just you're not ready for it yet.
I know.
You're still...
I'm very ready for it. I've watched it. Okay. I watched it recently on VHS.
It's mint, isn't it?
No. It's fine. Oh, it is pretty. Whatever. It's pretty fun. It's pretty fun, but I'm not...
We're talking about Interview for the Vampire for those that don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to continue. Right. This is the overwhelming theme that this is just an allegory for Christianity. Canuck is like a... up John the Baptist, running through the streets proclaiming the return of the savior. He is also like a weak-willed, yellow-bellied man that gets manipulated from afar rather than up close, but that's fine,
right?
Because it's Canuck, you know what I mean? Jesus was resurrected into an absolute beefcake bearded god bod, and Nosferatu is resurrected into a rotting corpse. Inversion. See what I'm saying? Jesus Christ is pictured to be the bringer of peace and a better life.
Mm-hmm.
Count Orlok, our Nosferatu, brings a boat of plague rats and kills children on a casual Tuesday. You know what I mean?
Right.
The finale of Nosferatu 2024 can be interpreted as a showdown between good versus evil, light versus dark, a Christ-like self-sacrifice to save the world from the curse of the Antichrist. Is this analogy enough to turn Ben into a Christian little boy? No.
Right.
But Lily Rose Depp might be.
Right. Why?
She was willing to give her bare breasts for the human race. And that will never be forgotten through the echelons of time.
Oh, okay. I hear your point. I do hear your point. There is Christian allegory in there.
Also, the whole thing about vampires being the Antichrist, you've got, like, since the dawn of time, the whole holding a cross up to them is like, whoa, power of Christ.
So, the inversion of the inversion of the blood of Christ and the perversion of Christian imagery is the whole thing. That's why in Bram Stoker's Dracula, when he has his big freak out in the church and he's like, I'll become it, I'll become the inverse of all of this.
Yeah, of course.
But to give Nosferatu credit for what The Matrix or Mother or Days of Heaven or The Tree of Life or Dune or The Lion King, like, these have all got Christian allegory built into them where things that happened in the Bible happened here.
Yeah.
And to invert it is, again, a lovely thing. Yeah. I just don't know if I'm like, oh, that's mint. I'm like, oh, you're doing that thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get what you're saying. I think the thing that tickled me, though, is that, like, this is my entrance point into this. It's a brutal look at, it's a brutal, slow art house look at horror. So you were saying this is like, it's a good horror film, which just means it is a good horror film. It's not elevated
it's a good
horror.
Film.
It's just good horror.
Yeah, it's a good film.
Exactly.
That attempts to be scary. I didn't find it scary, but I know others have.
Okay.
And that, for me, is a great horror film. If it's a good film and people are scared by it, it's a good horror film.
Okay. So for me, a good horror film, because I like the goofy side, I like the over-the-top gore, I like the practical effects, and I like the stupid stories that we can't really explore in normal cinema, it gives us sort of free rein to do whatever we want in that wheelhouse, right?
So totally.
Being called elevated horror it's technically correct. I would call it more art house horror because of how slow moving it is, because of how it's shot.
Yeah, yeah.
The sort of the fact that it is so unbelievably beautiful. That it is like...
So, I think a film like this, it hasn't lost sight of the fact that cinema and film is an art form. It's moving pictures, and it treats the moving image very much like you would a still photograph. If I wouldn't take a still photograph of that, why am I filming it? Eggers has got a great eye for that. He's not just, let's just stick a camera in there and just film it. Mm. Like David Fincher, he has that eye for composition, but uses it so artistically and so beautifully. You're right. That's a brilliant fact of the film. I just wouldn't call it elevated. I'd call it good filmmaking. Do you know what I mean?
But in the wheelhouse of horror, the horror that is released on a Blumhouse. You think Blumhouse is going to do some shit like this? I think Atomic Monster is going to be putting out stuff like this.
That's why I'm not a fan of that, you know?
This is what I'm saying.
You are.
So for you, this is like basic level entry. This is what a horror needs to be for anything. For the horror genre, the rest of which you disown... This is elevated horror. This is top-notch horror for you to have that opinion of, yeah, I like it. That means it's elevated because you are so snobby towards the rest of it. You know what I mean? You're too posh for horror, my boy. Okay? My dear little baby-faced angel boy, you are too posh for horror. I'm going to attempt to make this a little bit more interesting, because I know that in your glory days, you were a little goth boy. You were a...
Oh, mate, the gothist. A peed black.
Bit of an edge, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know how it goes.
I never got there. I was always on the edge.
Yeah. I want to ask you, what does the occult and what does folklore help with us today? Like, what do they do for us in the modern day? How does it affect us in 2025?
Do you want the genuine, long, quite nerdy answer?
Give us the whole spiel.
You talked about the Bible. Now, whether or not you believe that there was a man called Jesus who was born 2,000 years ago, there are things in that story that are illustrative metaphors that are useful in your daily life.
Of course.
Folklore is the sort of B-sides of those stories, and they're interesting and they're fun, but there's also an element of, this was a story that held narrative significance and narrative relevance to the way people lived their lives then, and maybe people haven't changed all that much in the intervening time. So it's an interesting thing to learn about, to go, huh, I hadn't considered things that way or this way or the other. It's a sort of pre-cinema form of third-person empathy, where you can look at, okay, Little Red Riding Hood doesn't listen to the people who know better. She wanders off the path and she meets someone untrustworthy. And then what happens? What does she then have to do?
Mm.
That was always my interest in it.
I like that. That's a good answer. Robert Eggers has said, This is paraphrased because it was a fucking waffle answer. I think these tales can always be reinterpreted, and these are stories that we can always find new meaning in.
Oh, nice.
And I like this because I feel like this leads us nicely into my final takeaway of the film that I hope is going to do something for you.
Ooh. Gimme.
I watched this film recently and took Thomas Hutter as a warning to past lives that we've both lived. And I feel like if we would have paid more attention to this tale, all of the warning signs are there that we wouldn't have gone down certain paths, right?
Right.
Unchecked ambition and a deluded vision of success and what it means to be successful are easily influenced, easily corrupted, and can quickly disguise themselves in failure and destruction. Me and you both ran headfirst into what we thought was going to be the end goal. It was going to be the ultimate life that we're going to be living.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll be happy if I can just earn a little bit more. I'll be happy if I can just do a little bit more. I'll be happy.
My identity was my job description.
Same. My identity was exactly that. And the whole career path, everything about it, advancing that was the only thing that mattered. Everything else fell to the wayside, right?
Yeah. Everything else got burned. I would legitimately damage other parts of my life.
Same.
In the hope that it might help the career. Yeah. And it's like sacrificial altar shit.
That's exactly
weird.
It. I'll fracture this part of my life now because I know it will eventually heal and come back as a stronger bone.
Yeah.
Never true. Stupid way of looking at life.
Yeah.
So Thomas is so swept up in the belief that his success is going to solve all of his and Ellen's problems. He doesn't really take into consideration what he's doing or all the weird, dangerous shit that he's doing to follow this blind belief, right? And it's because of this naive, misguided belief that Orlok is able to manipulate him to a point of selling his own wife for a bag of gold. It's
sort of, yes. Yeah. He doesn't know what he's signing at the time.
But it doesn't matter to him because he sees the end goal in sight and goes, it's worth the gamble, which is insanity.
Yeah.
When you're dealing
with... Well, you say that. We did that all the time.
Exactly. And this is the point I'm making. From this film, right, I'm looking at it and I'm going, God damn, if I would have seen this 12 years ago, I might not be a 36-year-old sober man, not through choice. You know what I mean?
And
I think this film, to bring those sort of emotions bubbling through to the surface and really sort of really prevalently so hold up a mirror and go, hey, buddy.
Totally.
Hey, buddy. You were... Does this look familiar? Does this look familiar here, bud?
And that's a brilliant, brilliant thing.
It's nice to have that in a horror movie that's about a goofy vampire. You must bounce on it.
Oh, dude, just quickly, that voice. that voice. So Bill Skarsgård trained as an opera singer to get his voice a full octave lower.
Yeah, classic
opera. For those that don't know octaves, you can sing a note up here or you can sing a note up here. It's the same note, even though it's a different register. So he's normally talking up here and then he starts talking down here. But he does that.
Are you the opera teacher? Oh,
not everyone knows what an octave is, Ben. Okay. Jesus, not everyone did music.
It's a bit up.
It's exactly all the way up.
Yeah.
It's one exact octave up.
There you go.
I was really impressed with the voice. I thought it was fantastic. It's sort of this kind of throat singing, gravelly thing. But then when we were researching how he did it, I realized that he got the idea because Gary Oldman did it in Dracula 1992.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that I think, is my caveat to your point.
Okay.
You are a man who...
I am.
Right. Whether you are fully on the spectrum or not is kind of irrelevant. You have a bit of the tism.
It's undiagnosed, but there's something there. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay. And I won't respect it until you get a diagnosis, but I also respect you enough to agree.
Thanks.
So I think there's an awful lot of cinema that you've previously watched and gone, oh, I'm bored. This isn't for me. Mm-hmm. It's too subtle. I don't get this. That everyone on the ADHD anxiety side of the spectrum, we're all over, right? And I think this film for you brought a bunch of stuff that you'd not seen before in horror that you were like, wow, this is brilliant. I'm really into this. Because it like you said, Count Orlok was a blunt enough hammer to smash through you could watch the people in the period drama and you could gauge their reactions in this sort of relatively rare air of oldie worldy times that you don't normally dip into.
Yeah, all
and
true.
Go, oh, I get this now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something novel and new, which brings the element of like, wow, I'm enjoying this.
I wouldn't say new. I'd say tolerable.
Tolerable. It was, there we go. Yeah. Tolerable. It made the intolerable tolerable. And therefore, there's that whole world of stuff that normally you hate, but now you're like, this is me.
Yeah, exactly. Cauliflower tastes like solid piss. Cauliflower cheese, outstanding.
There we go.
You know what I mean? That's exactly what this is.
Orlok's the cheese.
Yeah, that's
and
what it is.
For a man who loves a bit of cauliflower,
loves
a bit of roast cauliflower, and I'm sitting down, I like cheese, I like cauliflower. You put them together, I go, yes, it's cauliflower cheese. What's the big deal?
It's game changing. That's what it is. It takes solid piss and makes it lovely. You know what I mean? So for a man that loves solid piss. No, I get exactly what you're saying. You are exactly right. I think that is what it is. This is why I think he's the Carl Sagan of horror.
Right.
Because he's taken stuff that I wouldn't... And all the stuff that I've spoken about, right? The Antichrist, the Christian allegories, the Ellen being like the Christ-like sacrifice. Fucking hell, that's hard to say.
Totally.
All this stuff is very basic stuff, right? But it blew me away in this film because the way it was presented.
Right, exactly.
And the way it hit my palate. And that's what I think is most important about every film that we watch and every film that we talk about. It's all interpretation. It's all been done before, but it's all just iterations of iterations of iterations.
Ooh, I've got something for that.
But yeah, you're exactly right. And that's why I love this film. It opened up a world of period drama that I could tolerate. And I'm immensely grateful.
And also, I have to say, Nosferatu is the inverse of the Christian myth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nosferatu is the inverse of So Hot right now. Because it's a villain playing the romance lead.
Ooh. It's just, oh my God. If this is the third bit of So Hot Right Now, I'm fuming.
This is the third entry in So Hot Right Now. This is the inverse where something monstrous is the romantic lead because that forehead is horrifying.
Oh, how dare you? It's perfection. It is perfection. All right.
No, but I think Orlok as a romance star is valid.
I love this. Yeah.
I think unlike Thomas Hutter, his only focus is Ellen.
Oh God, I love this.
You can say that for Orlok. It's like he doesn't care about anything else.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about the career. He doesn't care about anything but her. And I think that's part of the allure.
I mean, he had some fun killing them kids.
Who doesn't?
You know what I mean?
Who doesn't?
It's a Tuesday. What else are you going to do?
Right.
Bingo's off. That's on Thursday. You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair.
The natter, that's not till Wednesday.
I've got a comment corner this week.
Hit me with it.
Well, I feel like it needs to come with apologies to it's an Instagram account that we love. We collaborated with them and we covered every Godzilla movie ever in the legendary Monsterverse.
Oh, is this Godzilla?
This is Godzilla _.
I love
this
guy.
We were talking about Heretic and how it's a film about iterations that is itself an iteration.
Mm.
And they commented, they said, so recursive you mean? And I went, is that like it's constantly in its own loop?
Okay.
And they went, well, recursive as in circling back and covering ground through new ideas or lenses.
Okay.
At its core, it's providing depth where it wasn't as clear before.
Yeah.
And rather than advance to other ideas thematically,
go
thick instead of wide. It's a common storytelling tactic in non-fiction in particular.
It is.
Generally, though, it's a good way to help the consumer feel the emotional and intellectual connectivity of a singular idea.
I love that answer. I also fear...
Great answer.
...that you being a shithouse...
...replied, so it's like it's constantly in its own loop.
See?
You'd be right. That's exactly what I wrote.
There you go. There you go.
And unfortunately, it didn't land. They just went, well, yes. I was like, oh. I feel like I've caused offense here by just trying to be recursive.
A, Godzilla, love you. Thank you for, contributing. That's a very sweet thing to do.
Great insight as well.
Great insight. Just,
great insight. Like brilliant, genuinely brilliant insight.
Also, genuine apologies for Rob being an absolute shit monster.
What are you going to rate Nosferatu 2024 by Robert Eggers?
Fat 10. This is a fat 10. All the way through fat 10. I can watch this time and time and time again. And there's stuff that I miss. There's little nods. There's tons of stuff that we didn't get into. The sigil.
Ooh.
Count Orlok's sigil. There's a tiny symbol in the middle of a seven-pointed star. Mm-hmm. Seven-pointed star to do with Satanism. Obviously, like, doom, 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 doom. No one would know this. Why would they? It's like the fucking 1800s.
Right.
There's a little tiny symbol in the middle, and it means blood.
Ooh.
And these little translations and stuff, and these little things that all these like horror nerds are picking out left, right, and center. Is like, it's delicious. It's delicious.
Well, on the other side of that, lilac, which is Ellen's flower, is regarded as magical by the Celts and was a reminder of an old love in Victorian era.
Exactly. See, stuff like this?
Yeah.
Tiny little things that are peppered throughout the film, but there are so many of these things as well. There's so many.
Oh, I'm so glad we got here. Do you want to hear the cutest fact you will hear about 2024's Nosferatu by Robert Eggers?
Yeah.
So there's a scene in the mausoleum where Willem Dafoe's character is setting fire to everything.
Yes.
And the camera pulls back. It's a beautiful shot. And in the back of that shot, there's a little angel statue.
There is, yeah.
Right. Now, the reason that's there, and Robert Eggers explains, it's a super little dorky thing here, he says. I directed Nosferatu as a stage play when I was 17 years old, and my wife, in that scene, played the statue of an angel.
Aww. That's really
so
cute.
When he came to make the film, he made sure that there was a statue there so he could lean into his wife and go, there's your character.
That's so cute. It's the cutest cute that it's ever been. I could have put you in the film, but instead, here's a statue.
Mint.
What are you rating it?
Oh, it's going to be a 9.9.
Okay, that's
and
fair.
And I tell you for why. It's an excellent film. For anyone who hasn't seen the vast number of vampire movies that you and I have, mm-hmm. who isn't 36, who isn't quite as jaded, this is a fucking excellent entry point.
Mm, incredible.
This is a brilliant film for anyone under the age of 25. Mm-hmm. Or anyone under the age of 30 who doesn't watch that many films. It's beautifully shot. It's wonderfully lit. The performances are incredible. The special effects are out of this world. Mm-hmm. It could do with 20 minutes being cut out, but then there's not a single scene that I could look at and go, you could probably lose that because
exactly.
every single scene is a joy. Mm-hmm. But it just doesn't come together for me to be more than the sum of its parts. And do you know what? What a nice complaint to have.
Do you know what I mean? It's
right.
Yeah, I thought I was going to be upset about your takeaway on this. That's quite pleasant. I'm happy that you're here with a horror film rather than sniffing your nose up, being sort of like, where's the subtext? Where's the
it's
detail?
There. It is. There. It's and all it, there. It does it, do it's you know just, what? It doesn't have to be revelatory.
Exactly.
It's a good film. I watched it at the cinema. Yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And if you've not seen it yet, what are you doing 58 minutes into a podcast about it? Why are you here? Are you lost?
Go and watch it. Go and watch it immediately. It's 1,000% worth your time.
What's next week, Ben? What's next week?
That's a question for you, bud. I'm not sure what we're doing next week.
A question for me indeed, because I realised that we've got a hole in our filmography, babe. We covered almost all the films of one man's entire career.
Did we?
And then we just left him. We just left him to languish.
Who?
We did the Cornetto trilogy involving Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End. And then we just left Edgar Wright to languish.
We did just
and
leave
I
him.
Feel okay. like, given that it's 15 years since the release of Scott Pilgrim versus The World,
okay.
we should revisit Edgar Wright.
I'm down for this.
And do an Edgar Wright series.
I'm up
just
for this.
A little brief in and out.
Yeah.
Quick little adventure.
I'm down for this.
We're going to do Scott Pilgrim. Mm-hmm. Then we can do Baby Driver.
Love Baby
and then
Driver.
We can then end on a terrible film with Last Night in Soho.
I love Last Night in Soho. This is going to be a great one. Okay.
Okay. I'll fight you. I'll fight you in a car park. There we go.
Do
set.
It. It's beautiful. Anya Taylor-Joy. I win. End of.
Oh, of course. You like monsters cast as romantic leads.
There you
I
go.
Forgot.
I win. End of. I think after that, I want to dip into a bit of Swayze. I want to do an unofficial Swayze trilogy. I've got there's a theory out there floating around. I want us to investigate it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're gonna.
Don't spill the beans I know what it is, and it's fascinating.
I'll edge.
And I don't know whether or not to agree with it or fight you tooth and nail the whole way. I don't know what's going to be more entertaining.
Oh, the entertainment. Let's just lean into it. Let's just see where Swayze takes us. You know what I mean?
Ooh.
Let's just...
Into the basement of his Donnie Darko mansion. Hopefully not.
Let's dance our way through into a roundhouse kick on a surfboard. Do you know what I'm saying?
So wait, what are the three Patrick Swayze movies?
Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
Hence the dance our way through.
Yeah.
Into a roundhouse kick.
Roadhouse.
On a surfboard.
Point Break.
All three.
Oh, Point Break is a classic.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we do Swayze. Oh, God.
Guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us. But just before we wrap up the show, if you enjoyed this episode and you want to support the show, you can leave us a review and tell a friend about us. It helps us more than you will ever know. It
really does. Sharing stuff to your story. The way the Instagram algorithm works is it pushes our content to more eyeballs the more interacted the content is.
Yeah, it was written by nightmare demons. So
yeah, it's horrible. I mean? So if you share it to your story, it will show it to another couple of hundred people, and that'll be mint. So please do that. And if you want more show, more content, extra episodes, you can support us over on Patreon for as low as £1 a month.
It's a quid! Guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us. We love each and every one of you more than you will ever know. Thank you for spending an hour of your time with us.
And to thank you properly for that time, especially on a Monday. A lot of you listen on a Monday. We know, we see the numbers. Ben's going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and feelings of this film into a little Monday motivational pep talk, you know, get you what you need to get through the week, while I just tell you to do what Nosferatu tells you to do and consume.
Listen, I know you wanted me to stay. I just can't ignore these crazy visions of me in LA. When I heard that there was a special place where boys and girls can be queens.
Is this Chapel Row?
Every single day.
No.
I'm having wicked dreams of leaving Tennessee.
I fucking hate you.
I can hear Santa Monica. I swear it's calling me. Won't make my mama proud. It's going to cause a scene. She's going to see her baby girl. I know she's going to scream.
How long are her songs,
God,
man? Jesus.
What have you done? You're a pink pony girl and you dance at the club. Oh, mama. Come on.
Yeah, it's
We're down at the Pink Pony Club. Chaperone is ruining my life. Love you, buddy.
Love you too, babe.